Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're back here with Dr. Javeed Sukhera and Dr. Laura Saunders from the Institute of Living. We're focusing on this half hour. It's Mental Health Awareness Month, and we thought we'd break it up into a sort of adult mental health in one half hour, and then youth in the second half hour. And what I wanted to ask, what do you see the most in terms of issues and challenges?
Well, we work in an acute care setting, so I think that's...
So that's inpatient?
So it's we have levels of care. There's inpatient, there's what's called partial hospital, where you're in a program 4 or 5 days a week for 3 or 4 hours a day. There's intensive outpatient, which is a couple hours, 2-3 hours a day for 3 days a week, and then there's outpatient. So there's levels of care. So we're, in general, an acute care setting at the Institute of Living. So we see people that are struggling the most. We see those individuals with severe anxiety or severe depression to the point of suicidality. And that goes for children, adolescents, and adults. We see all levels of care. And, you know, I think as we went through the pandemic, there was a lot of increase in need. I think there was some fear initially about accessing any kind of health care, and I think the mental health care system's always been more difficult to navigate because there's a lot of uncertain pathways.
Yeah, so that's where the challenge lies, right? We were dealing with people who were already struggling before, people with some of the most complex and challenging and difficult to treat conditions. But then in addition, there were a lot more people struggling on top of that. And so it's simply the truth that the system wasn't designed to meet the needs of the complex folks pre-pandemic already. And so the large influx of people needing help and assistance really hasn't matched up with the kinds of resources and resourcing that has been invested into mental health.
So what needs to change then? Like what, you know, in Canada, it's a lot different, right? So maybe the things that you think do better up there, maybe some sort of socialized medicine works better. But for me, I can't believe that there isn't more insurance support for this stuff. And B, like, we're a big country and we just make more layers. We don't reduce layers. So it just gets more complicated. I will say, not just from a mental health standpoint, but from a physical health too. Like, I just don't address stuff because I make a cost benefit analysis in terms of what's a pain in my butt or what's going to cost me. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to live my life.
I think people need to recognize. And honestly, one of the things that I believe did happen during the pandemic is there was a lot more talk about mental health.
It's been destigmatized to a large degree for
yes,
a lot of people.
Yes, we still have a long ways to go, right? Stigma is the expectation of rejection based on an aspect of identity. So if you expect to be rejected by people if you share, yes, I've had depression, or yes, I have had anxiety, or yes, I've had trauma, if you expect to be rejected, you're not going to be willing to seek help. And that's a ongoing issue that we're always dealing with, is how to reduce stigma and bias for those people that want help and support.
I think it's also kind of a form of discrimination, right? If two people, you know, two 20-somethings walk into a healthcare facility and one has a motorcycle accident and the other person's having a panic attack, the system isn't really designed to meet the needs of the person with the panic attack. It hasn't been built around that.
But can it be done? My thing is, can it be done?
It absolutely can be done. And I think part of what we need to consider is, what's the perspective of the person who's experiencing the system? And how do we design the system around that person and their needs instead of in boxes or in check boxes?
Well, but I feel like I'd like to get more concrete with it because, like, how does that, how would that work? I mean, is that to force hospitals to have two columns and treat them equally? Or, I mean, we're not even talking about costs. You're just talking about, you know, the thing that they're not equipped to handle these issues. But that doesn't even get to the point of cost. I mean, so, like, you know, I don't even know where to start is my point. In America, the problem is we just stack things on top of each other. We don't look at efficiencies.
Yep.
And so every time you make a change, it makes it less efficient.
Well, you're bringing up the core point. And the core point is entry into the system, right? How? So if someone has, if you have a motorcycle accident, everyone knows you go to the emergency room, you know, based on how severe it is. If you have a GI issue, you call up your primary care doctor or you seek out a GI specialist. The entry into the system for physical issues is fairly well established, but there's less understanding about how to access mental health care. And I think that's why, you know, I think Institute Living does a beautiful job with a lot of outreach into the community to go out into communities, to let people know we're here, we're part of your community, we want to help you. But there is a lot of confusion about how to access mental health care.
Right. And so then this other thing that I run into, and this is more for the kids, we can talk about later. And again, I'm not giving a laundry list of grievances for the two of you to address for the industry. It's a little unfair. But I want to have the conversation, which is basically anyone who's any good. No, that's not true. If you're not affiliated with a group like the IOL and you're on your own, if you have demand in your practice, you don't take insurance. Why would you?
So, you know, you brought up Canada. So let me just burst everyone's bubble. It's not better in Canada. The system's underfunded. Wait times are atrocious. It's a two-tiered mental health system in Canada, just like it is here.
Interesting.
In many ways, access is better here than it is in Canada. But what we're struggling with is it's backwards and upside down. When someone's struggling, you shouldn't need a PhD to figure out, where do I go? Who do I talk to?
Right.
There's a basic way that we know people can access help, and it should be something that's after hours. It should be a one-stop shop, and it should be simple and user-friendly. And I think that that's part of what we want to do with the IOL is really not just think about what our needs are today, but build a system around, you know, real-time needs and real-time care.
Because if you get to people before the crisis, before they get to you, if you get to them before they get to the IOL, you can solve a lot of problems earlier and actually would ease the system, right? So if you solve the stigma issue, which seems to be going in the right direction, I'll be candid, with all these pro athletes and everybody else being acknowledging it, I think there's positivity there. But the access part of it is terrible.
Yeah, and I think it's continually sending the message that there actually is no physical health without mental health. If you don't feel okay about yourself, even if you feel well physically, your day-to-day existence is somehow less. So we need to really to continually and I'm happy when I hear that, you know, there's high profile people that come out and talk about mental health issues. But if you also listen, there's a lot of backlash for those people as well, right? So when the athletes miss a tournament because they're severely depressed or they're severely anxious, you know, there's support, but there's as much backlash. The belief system that it's in your head as if it doesn't exist or if it's not as relevant is still something that we combat all the time.
Yeah, it's so true. And we have to take a quick break here. Because I even myself, when my kids are struggling with a thing, I was like, well, we just handled it. And then I'm like, we sucked it up. We dealt with it. And you used to think like, well, that they need to get tougher. And then, but then you think about it in the context of this conversation, and like, maybe that's not the right way to respond to it, right? I mean, I think we're all sort of prone to that. And I'm not asking, but as I think here, you know, part of me is like, maybe every primary care practice needs to have both. Yeah. You know, maybe, you know, like that makes, I mean, I'm not trying to solve the world's problems here, but like as you're speaking about that access, like, or like, you know how they now, when you are an addict and you OD in the ER, they have someone right there at that time who could take you to a bed right away. Like that's progress, right? So maybe on the mental health side, there's some way to work it in, to the primary care PCP model.
You know, the solutions are honestly not rocket science.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward. And you're right that there's a lot of gunk and messiness. And you're right that we need to change payment systems to just make things more streamlined.
We're back with Dr. Javed Sukhera and Dr. Laura Saunders of the Institute of Living. And we talked with a lot of adult stuff. And I want to get back to the integrative side of it because I think we need to solve that problem today. But I want to jump in with our children. And it's interesting because we all three of us have kids at different stages. You know, mine are 12, 14, and 15. Mm-hmm. And yours are probably 17 and 20. And you have elementary school children, Dr. Sukhera. So this is really fascinating. I want to start from, and I'm not projecting, but I, you know, from all my friends in this, I want to start with our teenagers. And there's the anxiety issue that I think we've all seen. But I also, I want to know your thoughts on how do you handle kids who don't want help, who don't want to talk?
Well, that is a significant problem. And that, again, we talked a little bit about stigma. That is, you know, it's equally as important if you have an infection in your arm to get it checked out as you do that you have debilitating anxiety and you can't leave the house in the morning because you have chronic stomach aches, and understanding that those stomach aches are really related to anxiety, equally as important, not to be minimized as a physical and a psychological issue. But it is really emphasizing how much you cannot enjoy your well-being without dealing with all parts. So it's physical and mental health. And we make it such a formal process sometimes. Honestly, if a child or an adolescent just has someone to talk to, someone to release those fears and those worries and those anxieties, you know, while it would be great if it was a professional, there just needs to be someone. So if it's a school counselor, if it's a coach, if it's someone, they need to have that outlet, someone that they can start.
You know, that sounds great. I just feel like, I don't know, that what if someone's not paralyzed by that anxiety and are functioning, but you know could benefit or just don't want to go?
There's still a lot of shame. And I think that there's a lot of shame that people have that, you know, maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe this is a weakness. And so it's really important we normalize the fact that this is human, that we might be rushing through and looking for fixes. But I think we have to all just focus more on creating space for these kinds of conversations at home, at school, with others, and making sure that young people know we're here, we're present, we're ready. But we can't push either. We have to be very careful about that because we know if we push, they push back, right? That's how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, if talk about my house, I mean, I have one child who does some therapy and both the other two could probably benefit from it, but I'm not able to do it. And not talking about specific names on top of that, just quickly before we have to take yet another break, what are you seeing the most with our young people?
Well, anxiety is a top issue. It was before, it still is. There's a lot of anxiety, and anxiety combined with really unhealthy coping spills over into really, really a lot of pain and suffering for young people and families. It's a straightforward issue. We have treatments. It's pretty basic stuff to treat.
How do you know when anxiety spills over to the I need help? Because anxiety is a natural human condition, right?
Anxiety actually is beneficial, right? It's a little bit of anxiety. It makes you, you know, clean your house or study for a test or prepare for something. So a little bit of anxiety is okay. It's when it, you know, the guideline that we use all the time is when it hinders functioning, when your anxiety is so debilitating that you can't get yourself to school, or now you want to quit soccer or lacrosse because your anxiety is too high, or you don't really want to socialize with any friends because, you know, what if they say something to you, or what if you, you know, have an anxiety attack with them. And right. So when it hinders functioning.
Well, first of all, I just want to tell you, I appreciate you both being here, and we have another good block to get more of the conversation in. We're here with Dr. Javed Sukhera and Dr. Laura Saunders from the Institute of Living here talking about, it's Mental Health Awareness Month, so we thought we would dedicate a whole hour to it. A couple quick questions before we have to say goodbye for the morning, and we appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to come here. Is medication, is how often does, say our kids, and there was this whole thing, you know, my generation wasn't medicated, and then we went, we're like, everyone's medicated, and then I, you know, I have a good friend who said to me, whose child was being treated for things before my kids were, you know, big enough to even consider some of this stuff, that, you know, he was basically like, if my child needs to stay on medication for life and it gives her a chance to have a good life, then I don't care. And so my question is, what's the percentage of when kids are on medication at whatever levels that they end up being on medication for their whole life?
So I'm going to bust that myth right now.
Right.
When we're talking about kids, we don't have to talk about their whole life. We're talking about that moment. We're talking about intervening early so that they can move forward in a way that they find and realize their own strength. And in most cases, the vast majority of cases, any kids that are started on meds for things like anxiety or depression don't need to be on them for the rest of their lives.
But are they?
So I think that's not a straightforward answer. Every case is unique and different. And I think that most of the times what we see is when kids get to that transition to college, university,
right?
Some people make a call. And some of them think, okay, I'm good. Some of them think, you know, I think I want just a little bit of this to make sure that I'm okay. So each individual might have a different circumstance, but at the end of the day, in that moment, people feel a lot of pressure, like this is a lifelong medication thing, and it's really just about giving the right treatment, just like we would for any medical illness. And in some cases, I look at it like wearing glasses, right?
Right.
Particularly with learning issues. If your kid needs glasses to see better, we give it to them. Sometimes some kids need medication to help with the way that their brain works in learning, and we would want them to have the best setup for success. That doesn't mean they need it forever.
So what if like stuff like, I don't know, bipolar or obsessive compulsive disorder, those things sort of need treatment forever, right?
They need treatment, but individuals, as they go through their developmental stages, you know, children, adolescents, young adults, as they go through their developmental stages, they often learn strategies to manage their symptoms in such a way that they may or may not need medication. And ideally, you know, as, you know, I've worked with a lot of young adults who've had pretty significant psychiatric illnesses, but they have a better understanding that, wow, yeah, I feel like I'm hitting a depressive episode, a really depressive phase here. So these are the things that I need to do when I'm doing that. I know that I need to like eat a little bit better and get some sunshine, right? I need to do things to actually help myself. So any treatment is always sort of multifactorial. So it's not just about, you know, even if you have high cholesterol, right? It's not just taking a medication. It's a it's medication and exercise and lifestyle changes. And it's the same way in psychiatry and psychology and behavioral health. There are multiple ways to address any issue.
Sure. But then you got to wean yourself off, and then something bad can happen when you do that. And like the trial and error process is so scary. Some people are like, I'd just rather just stay where I'm at.
We got to be easier on ourselves, though. I mean, I would say to anybody who's struggling, particularly when you're younger, this isn't forever. This is just right now. If you access the help that you need, the person who's there is here to help you. No one's here to hurt you. And I would focus on getting people through that moment and helping build those skills so that maybe medications won't be needed in the future.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I find it's a little scary with the kids, but I mean, that stuff makes sense. I find that the trial and error process, even finding the right medication and the right dosage, I find is kind of a frightening process, because the trial and error is bad stuff can happen in that trial and error process. And so I know there's no efficient way to do it. I understand what it is, but the weaning off and then trying to see if you're okay, to me, is dangerous, right? And so that whole process worries me. Listen, I want to ask two more questions with Dr. Javed Sukhera and Dr. Laura Saunders with the Institute of Living. One is, let's get back to this integrated side of things. How, in your opinion, could we get this done? It makes total sense to have the physical and the psychological together in practices, right? And what I want to know is how, if that becomes like my raison d'etre, like how would I do that? How would I get, do I have to go to the state legislature to pass a bill? Do I have to go to Washington? Or do I just have to, you know, tell my primary care physician, who doesn't really even need me because they're so busy they don't take new patients anyway, so they don't care what I think?
A little bit of everything. I think that the main thing I would say is no one's powerless. Advocacy is part of this. So I would talk to state representatives. I would talk to federal representatives. I would ask and challenge them what their plan is to do the evidence-based things that we know work, like integrated care, like embedding mental health folks. And the biggest issue we've got is workforce. We need support from decision makers to make sure we have enough people doing this work. Because if we don't have enough of us, okay, how do we help people?
But how do we do it? Does it need to be a bill? Does there need to be like legislation to do this?
Well, I do think some of that's starting. For example, you know, just getting paid for, you know, remote therapy, right? You know, Connecticut has passed legislation. You know, first it was just COVID related, but now they see that, no, actually, we can improve access to care for people that are outside of a short geographic area who can get care. If you ask any pediatrician or adolescent medicine person, they know that mental health and behavioral health folks need to be embedded within a practice. And more practices are actually doing that.
But I guess the point is you have to financially incentivize it to start it. I mean, that's the bottom line. Because people don't want to do telehealth because there's not enough money in it.
So it's not just financially incentivize. I think because there's a lot of discrimination against mental health in our health system, it's to stop de-incentivizing.
I don't know. I don't know. I feel like if because telehealth makes total sense. You know, it increases access. It can destigmatize. You don't have to walk through the doors. But they're not doing it in a hand over in droves because it doesn't make as much money. We just talked about the for-profit system and its problems. I'm not trying to blow like holes in it, but I mean, to me, like these sort of like idealistic hypotheticals are different when you actually think this is an idea that's important. And I don't know that just, you know, I think paying for it makes sense, but then in some ways that's sort of like, oh, it's the wrong message, but it does make sense.
You can't make something from nothing, right? You can only shuffle the deck so much before you make sure that you make that investment. When it comes to kids, I think that's where the case is. And parents have advocated for change, and it's moved forward at the state level. I think that parents need to keep it up, keep the heat up, and keep pressuring folks that make decisions to make sure that they do everything in their power so that we have the systems and access for our kids.
We got about a minute left. I know... Dr. Sakari, you wanted to mention this about, you know, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. What can we do for the people like we love or we know if we, you know, because that's hard to be interventionist, right? And so if we see someone around us struggling at any level, like, what do we do?
So the first thing I think is important for us is to lean into it, to validate it. Make sure people that might be struggling or suffering know that we're here, that we get it, that their pain is real, that we believe them, and that we believe in them, and really encourage them to access whatever help that might be, whether it's pediatrician, family doctor, teacher, counselor, family member, friend, but to speak up, because asking for help is the most courageous thing anyone can do.
I also think that there's some level of understanding, those of us that work in behavioral health, that we are on a daily basis ambassadors. And we are ambassadors in that, you know, I have people ask me all the time. I get cold calls. I get friends and relatives and other people saying, I think my cousin, my child, my sibling needs help. Do you have access to resources? So I carry with me in my phone resources to really try to help people. So, you know, we are on a regular basis ambassadors to help people, help decrease the stigma, to provide support wherever we can.
Listen, thanks to you both, Dr. Javeed Sukera and Dr. Laura Saunders. Thank you for your time.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.